Starting with a question this hour, have you come across a scam or a questionable offer during this pandemic? Or maybe you're concerned that your parents or grandparents will. Experts in the legal field say this time of uncertainty has brought out, yes, the best in a lot of people, and unfortunately the worst in some. Now, the best in the work of healthcare workers, essential workers, good Samaritans. The worst in people who are trying to take advantage of vulnerable populations and people out of the workforce by way of scams. Attorney General Letitia James is warning New Yorkers about these scams. Her office is removing illegal sites one by one now. Sites, she says, are grifts. They're swindling Americans. From selling home testing kits not approved by the FDA, to pushing fake cures and remedies, to donation scams, James says there's a lot to look out for. In fact, she says one website was a fake hospital, complete with pictures, stock photos used, fake interviews with doctors, names of doctors who don't exist, asking people to give money. Just an amazingly elaborate scam. Just horrible stuff. And local attorneys agree. They say we can learn a lot about ethics and how humans behave during this crisis. We're going to explore some of that this hour with our guest. Scott Maloof is on the line with us. He's a local attorney whose practice is focused on the intersection of social media and the law. Welcome back to the program, Scott. Thanks for joining us.
Hey, Evan. Thanks for having me.
And Mike Johansson is a senior lecturer of communication at RIT and a social media consultant at Fixitology. Mike, welcome back. How are you?
Oh, doing just fine. Thank you.
Well, to be clear here, Mike Johansson, scams like this are as old as the internet. So it probably doesn't surprise you that these kind of scams are happening. My concern are people like, I love you, Mom. I love you. But my mom, if you're listening back in Ohio, Mom, I love you. But you are the kind of person I'm worried about here because there's a lot that can look pretty legit. So, Mike, what are your initial thoughts on what we're seeing here?
Well, I honestly think that, you know, a pandemic or any major crisis, I mean, it just makes the climate is just ideal for scam artists, you know. And the thing it brings to mind, not to get too geeky, and maybe one of your physics guests would be better to talk about this, is a thing called the Heisenberg Uncertainty Principle. And that basically says that the more confident you are about one thing that's related to something, the more likely you are to be wrong about the other thing that's related to it. So it's like, you know, these two things. We're in an age now where, because of the internet, we expect everything to have answers to everything. We expect everything to be solvable. Everything, we've literally gone from, when I was a kid, it wasn't common, but it wasn't unusual to have someone in your school die from a disease. My daughter went through school without having anyone die from a disease. And the world has changed so much. We just expect there to be answers. And when there aren't answers, when uncertainty is playing on us all the time, we grasp for things that seem to provide that certainty, and scam artists know this, and they play up to that.
About an hour ago, I had a chance to talk to the Attorney General of New York State, Letitia James, who has these specific warnings for all of us when it comes to scams. Let's listen.
So last week, the Office of Attorney General in New York, we announced a sweeping effort to scrub the internet of websites seeking to illegally profit and deceive millions of Americans and hundreds of millions more around the world off of this COVID-19 public health crisis. Fortunately, they're taking advantage of the anxiety and the fear that exists out there in regards to this pandemic. And so we wrote a letter to a number of domain name registrars about sites registered with them. And they were selling and marketing and promoting fraudulent goods and services. And since then, dozens of staff members of my office have been reviewing domain names for potential scams. It's unfortunate, but we continue to see this fraud every day, and we continue to work with these registrars to remove more domain names. And it's unfortunate that individuals are just trying to take advantage and illegally profit from the fears that currently exist. And I just wanted individuals to know that the Office of Attorney General is there to protect the interests of New Yorkers and to ensure that individuals do not illegally profit and deceive New Yorkers during this period of time of heightened fear and anxiety. We just right now at this point in time, everyone needs to be calm. We need to, again, practice social distancing. Wash our hands, wear our masks, and stay home close to our family.
I'm looking at your list of the kinds of scams that are out there, and I know that at least for the moment, you don't want to direct people to the actual sites because you don't want more attention on the fraudulent stuff.
No, but, by no means.
But what I'm looking at, categorically, I'm looking at selling fake cures and remedies, and we've seen a lot of this stuff. Is there a way that people can kind of determine whether what they're looking at is legit?
Well, let me just say this, that right now there is no cure. There is no remedy. There is no treatment. There is no vaccination to COVID-19, period, full stop. A number of websites have sold home testing kits to test for COVID-19, even though the FDA has not approved any testing kits for home or other personal use. Again, let me say that again. That is so important. A number of websites are selling home testing kits, but none, my friends, has been approved by the FDA for home testing kits. There are a number of websites are just trying to get your personal information, including credit card companies, for fraudulent purposes. And a number of websites are selling fake cures and remedies. A number of websites have sold products such as vitamin C and air purifiers. And they're basically fraudulent because there is no science behind any of these products. And right now, what we should be doing is just listening to the professionals and the scientists and epidemiologists. Right now, they are telling you that they are working on treatments. They are working on vaccinations. They are working on cures and that there is no home testing kit. There's a number of websites that have pretended to be fraudulent charities seeking donations for those in need, when in reality they have not been affiliated with any charity. And for the and in the state of New York, if you're interested in donating to a charity, you can always reach out to our office because our office has jurisdiction over charities and we actually register them. And so I just want individuals to be vigilant and to be conscious of what is actually happening, and that is individuals and fraudsters who are on these websites who are basically just trying to take advantage of vulnerable populations and unfortunately just try to take advantage of the heightened anxiety and fear that we are seeing these days. And it's not only unfortunate, but it's criminal.
That is Attorney General of New York State, Letitia James, joining us just about an hour ago, updating us on what the scams look like. And I want to bring in the attorney who's on the line with us, Scott Maloof. First of all, what does justice look like during a crisis when you've got some people trying to take advantage of others, saying, here's a home testing kit, here's a miracle cure, you know, here's an air purifier that will tell you everything or make sure that you're protected and insulated. What does justice look like for the people who've been victimized already? I'm thinking of people who have already sort of fallen for some of this stuff, Scott.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's definitely a challenge because of the fact if you've sent money out, it's going to be very difficult at this point to, you know, connect. For example, a lot of the New York State courts are open for only a select set of matters, emergency matters or essential matters, so it may be very difficult to go to court and get relief right now. That said, you know, we're seeing a lot of things, less formal resources. Like you've seen, you know, you heard to the Attorney General, you're looking at a lot of the Internet service companies are trying to be very strong on preventing phishing and scams like that. For example, Google has done a number of things to look at COVID. And the other thing is, if you have used a credit card, which a lot of online transactions, if not all, are going to require, or another form of electronic payment, look at those sources of disputing things. So, for example, right now, if you call your credit card company and you say, I have a dispute, you may be on hold for a long time. But they all have the option to send a letter and explain why the transaction was a problem for you. I actually recently had to do this myself. I sent a letter, and they reversed the transaction. We didn't have a phone call or anything, but it worked out without being on the phone for hours. So, you know, Evan, the number one thing is you're your best line of defense. You know, go and look at those remedies like the credit card company, like posting a complaint or seeing any of the intermediaries that may be out there, the website. And then secondly, before you even do this, ask yourself, be skeptical. Why am I getting this? Does it seem odd? You know, it might be too good to be true. For example, if you're getting something that says you got to act right now, whether it's an email or a phone call or a letter or on social, you know, all things that the Attorney General did not address, if you're getting that and they say you have to contact us immediately, you know, you should start with suspicion. And then, of course, don't give out your financial information, credit card, date of birth, Social Security number, you know, unless you're sure it's a legitimate organization. You know, the IRS is going to send you a letter. You can reach out back to them and understand. And, of course, as we've all seen, official agencies have had to deal with remote work. Things are much slower. So why would there be that immediacy, right? Tax day got pushed back to July 15th for the federal government and the state. So there should be some breathing room with anybody who's legitimate.
All right. Let's talk about some of the other things that are, I guess, scams or problems that we're seeing in different ways. Scott's kind of going to help us understand what's happening here. And I think Mike is just someone who's got this kind of wise perspective that kind of contextualizes how we behave in these times. And I want to look for the good in us. I want to look for the opportunity we have to take a crisis and bring out the best in us, while also acknowledging that sometimes we behave in ways that that don't really flatter us. So let's talk about Instacart, for example. Instacart users reportedly scamming shoppers with huge tip bait. Reading from the IB Times, quote, to reserve a spot more quickly, customers have resorted to including a big tip in their orders just to lure Instacart workers into receiving and serving their orders. There are cases, however, where some customers, just to secure a time slot for their orders, have turned this tip giving into a bait and switch tactic. Change the tip later, sometimes to zero, and you can adjust for that fact up to 3 days. So you offer this huge tip, an Instacart worker says, okay, I'll do it. And then within the next 3 days, you zero out that tip anyway. Scott Maloof, I'll start with you on this. I guess people can do this, though CNN's reporting on what Instacart is, how they're responding to this. What do you make of this problem?
Yeah, I mean, one of the challenges is that it's understandable why the app would allow you to change your tip, especially for something like grocery delivery, because maybe you're not even home when it comes, and there can be times where you find there's a problem, you know, you got the wrong thing.
Mm-hmm.
So it's understandable. But yes, I mean, this points to the big challenge of these online services, especially now, that it doesn't have that face-to-face social pressure that we would have. If somebody came to your door and handed you the groceries, your expectation would be you've got to hand the tip to them now. So a couple of things. One, the companies are trying to change some of their models, you know, changing how tips are given out, you know, to encourage more tipping, but also to be more cognizant of it. But with the apps, it's really, really difficult because, you know, there are legitimate instances where a tip was too large, and so it would have to go down. I think, you know, Evan, again, like the using yourself as your first line of defense, you know, one of the things may be looking at alternatives. I know you had a guest on last week who was a shopper on Instacart, and she said, you know, there are other ways to connect with me. I do shop for things. We've seen, for example, on the neighborhood app next door, neighbors are saying, I am going. If someone needs something, I will pick it up, or family members. So I think the first thing to do would be to say, again, look at your community, look at the people near you, and say, is there a different way to do this so that we don't, you know, necessarily use these services? But if you do, you know, and you're working, you're a gig worker, you know, be cognizant of that, that this is a risk, and if it's a tip that's way out of line, maybe it's too good to be true.
Hmm. Mike Johansson, this may not be a case where there's a legal remedy. As Scott says, it's just sort of looking as a community for other and better and more fair options. But what does this say about us, that some of us are doing this in a crisis?
Well, at the risk of sounding like the governor of the great state of New York, come on, that's not who we are. It's despicable. I mean, who does this kind of stuff? Really, I mean, that's all I have to say.
Well, Instacart, by the way, says they told CNN Business that the vast majority of people in the month of March, when the crisis picked up, if they adjusted their tips later, they adjusted their tips upward, that there was some zeroing out, but Instacart's trying to make it so it's harder to do that. There's not just a none tip option. You have to manually change a tip to zero, and which they're hoping deters people from doing that. And the public, as Scott says, just has to decide if that's good enough for us as a service that protects their workers enough. And if we don't think they're protecting their workers enough, then maybe we can find other services. Go ahead, Scott.
And, Evan, you know, remember, you're in a relationship with the service provider, with the app, with whatever entity you're using. If you engage in a series of behaviors that the app determines, again, algorithmically at a very high level, are abusive, you have three tips and then you went from $50 to zero three times in a row, they may ban you. And so there's also some of that going on. So it's something to be aware of because, remember, this is a longer-term situation. You may find yourself, you know, out of luck and kicked off all of these platforms.
Yep. Well, that's Instacart. How about Grubhub and DoorDash? Those are popular services. And here's Bloomberg reporting that Grubhub and DoorDash are accused in a suit of pushing prices higher. Quote, a group of New Yorkers sued Grubhub Inc., DoorDash Inc., Postmates Inc., and Uber Eats, accusing them of using their market power to stop restaurants from discounting meals to customers who order directly, even though it's cheaper to do that. The New York customers who seek class action status say the delivery service charges charge exorbitant fees that range from 13 to 40% of revenue, while the average restaurant's profit ranges about 3 to 9% of revenue, making delivery meals more expensive for eateries. All right, Scott, can they do that?
Yeah, I mean, I guess you should think of this as antitrust. That's where this claim sounds in. It's the idea of cornering the market, right? When you play Monopoly, you want to own one side of the board. If you play the Rochester version, you want to own the side with the War Memorial, Frontier Field, and the MAG. So
and High Falls and WXXI.
That's right. You want to own that side. That's what the gist of this complaint is that many, many restaurants are signing up for these services, not because it's going to help make a ton of money, but when things are low or when they had downtimes, especially pre-pandemic, you could be serving food, selling food that you didn't before. But in the heart of the complaint is the idea that there is a no-price competition clause, meaning if you sign up for our app, you have to charge the same price to the app user as the person who walks in the door, as the person who phones in an order. And the heart of that complaint is, wait a minute, I am around the corner from the restaurant, I walk in, and they are going to sell me something. They should give me a discount because it didn't cost them anything to acquire me as a customer, or it cost them a lot less. They don't have to split the funds with a delivery person, with the app. And so that's the heart of the complaint. And so, you know, as to whether it's going to be successful, antitrust claims are kind of a very esoteric area, or I should say a nuanced area. And, you know, if you're the defendant, you say, well, folks had a choice. Restaurants had a choice whether to sign up and use it. Consumers had a choice as to whether to sign up and use it. And secondly, the market for food delivery is bigger. We talked about, you know, Amazon and Peapod, and we talked about Wegmans with Meals to Go. So there is a lot of competition. Also, we're seeing some cities cracking down on this, and it's a question of how effective that'll be.
Mike Johansson, where do you come out on this?
Well, you know, I don't know. I don't really use these services. I'm not all that comfortable having meals sitting around and being delivered. So I'm probably not the best person to weigh on this. I mean, one of the things I'm sort of thinking is that people who are using these services, perhaps they really need them. And, you know, I feel bad for restaurants and everything, but, you know, people are using them if they want to use them, I guess, is my thing.
Yeah.
One thing I would like to get into at some point is a little bit about some of the things that are happening on the social platforms now because of the virus. So at any point, if you want to get into that.
Well, so let me transition to, I was going to go in that direction, and I'm going to start with a question from a listener who just emailed the following, Mike. BD says, there are ads flooding Facebook for the kinds of products that the Attorney General was talking about. Can Facebook be held accountable for that? In other words, probably the kinds of products that include fake cures or testing kits that aren't approved by the FDA, these home COVID cures that aren't real. And BD is saying Facebook's flooded with these things now. Who is responsible? Mike Johansson, what do you think?
So exactly. That's where I was going to go, is that Facebook, YouTube, and Twitter have all announced that a lot of their content checking people are no longer able to work because of social distancing. So what this means is that these platforms, where a lot of stuff is self-service, in other words, I can go to Facebook, I can put my own ad up, and then a human checker at some point is supposed to look at it and decide, okay, it's okay to go or it's not. A lot of those people are not working anymore doing their jobs because of social distancing, and they can't have access to the huge database they need to get into from home. So the platforms, Facebook and YouTube in particular, and Twitter to some extent, have announced that they're relying a lot more on algorithms to flag these things. What that means is, as users of these platforms, we have to be a lot more aware, a lot more skeptical of what we're seeing, because that human element that's been, you know, digging a lot of stuff off these platforms is a lot reduced right now. And so, you know, we have to be a lot more skeptical. And frankly, if we all have a bit more time on our hands, it really doesn't take a whole bunch of effort. It's just a little bit of research, and just before you share anything, before you click on anything.
So Mike, a couple things come to mind there before I kick it over to Scott on this. I take that point entirely, that this is a moment of personal responsibility during a crisis, especially when people can't work and you can't have the monitoring and you can't have the people who are sort of policing some of this stuff, that we have to do better on our own. I get that. But how much is on a company like Facebook if there are ads in their own marketplace that they're share, you know, that I will see if I use Facebook for bogus products?
Well, that's the issue with Facebook, because it is self-service. I mean, I can literally go on there now and I can put up an ad for a bogus product, and it might last 12 hours, might last 20, might last 2 or 3 days before it gets taken down. I mean, the checkers are just not there. They just don't have the quantity of people to be able to manually check these things.
So in many ways, then, that is not... I want to say it sounds like you're mildly sympathetic to Facebook, which you've never been in your life. So it sounds like...
Exactly.
Mark it down at 12:52 Eastern time on a Thursday. Yeah. Mike Johansson was mildly sympathetic to Facebook, saying that in this particular moment, it's going to take them more time than usual to police this stuff.
Right. And the choice is basically shut down the self-service thing and shut down their revenue, mm-hmm. or do the best they can.
Okay. Scott, are you sympathetic to Facebook?
I am sympathetic somewhat, and the reason is, Evan, we've discussed this a number of times. This is a content moderation question. And when you think about it, you know, it's something for us as humans, we're good at it. That's fake. That's not fake. But two things. When, as Mike said, the algorithms are not particularly good at this, to do this, you know, you can have an ad that says, my mask protects from COVID-19, you know, versus another one that says, are you concerned about COVID-19? Human gets that instantly. Algorithm may not. And remember, the scammer is putting out 1,000 versions of the ad to see something that sticks. So one, it's hard to do. And two, as to the legal question, generally, you know, the sites are protected. We've talked about Communications Decency Act, Section 230, that does protect them from content that users put up. There are cases right now that have said, you know, in certain situations when products are sold, we are not going to protect you. And that's out in the Third Circuit down in Philadelphia. So you may see some of this changing. But if that does happen, if Facebook is ultimately held responsible for everything sold on their platform, their decision will be nothing will be sold. So we have to think it through and say, is that a good thing to do? If you see ads that look fake or you think are fake, use the reporting tools. Bring it up and say, hey, this ad is really a problem. Because if enough people do that, presumably the algorithms will say, okay, humans are identifying a problem. Something maybe is wrong with this ad.
So in our last couple of minutes here, and we're not even going to get to everything I wanted to get to, but tomorrow on this program we're going to talk civil liberties in our first hour, and there's some interesting research on that. And when it comes to speech right now, when it comes to the concerns about spreading misinformation, Scott Maloof, briefly, when it comes to social platforms, should we expect to see anything that looks more authoritarian, more of a crackdown on speech, more blocks, more bans?
Evan, you said briefly. You know I can't do that as an attorney. No, I'm having fun with you. I think you're going to see Mike put his finger on it and mark it in your calendar. I agreed with Mike for once. It is the algorithmic tools are going to appear more authoritarian, and they're going to appear more draconian. So that's one thing is likely to happen. Two, I think there's going to be more of a crackdown as the platforms are seeing more and more public pressure, people saying things are not operating appropriately. We've seen that come out of Europe. And so it is a challenge that we're all going to have to navigate as well as those companies.
Okay, Mike Johansson.
Yeah, well, again, Scott and I agreeing. Who'd have thunk that? But this is exactly what has been happening. The last 3 or 4 weeks has been a huge surge in people reporting that their honest, good content is being taken down by the algorithms because it had a word that triggered or something like that in it. So, you know, that can seem more authoritarian, but really it's just a dumb computer somewhere saying, this is a bad word, take the post down. So it can seem that way. I don't think it's intended that way, but it's the consequence of where we're at.
Dave on Twitter says, Mike, isn't fact-checking the definition of a job where you're able to work from home? What are we worried about with Facebook here? Mike?
Well, I believe the way, at least for the way I understand Facebook works, is it has billions and billions of posts a day. Like Scott says, if I'm a scammer and I'm going to put up 1,000 ads and see which one gets through. So billions and billions of posts a day. The algorithms do an initial search, and then human checkers get a laundry list of things to go through. That laundry list is served up usually in a way that a home computer, if you're working from home, you just can't get at that database. I mean, they actually have centers where people go in to do this because of the sheer computing power it takes to do it. So that's the issue. In these centers, they just can't have as many people sitting shoulder to shoulder doing it as they used to have.
I want to thank both of you because we're out of time and we've got more to talk about. So we'll ask you back sometime soon. And sometime on the other side of this, I'll see you in person. Mike Johansson, I always appreciate you sort of pushing us toward our better angels when it comes to the way we use social platforms, because we're going to have to get there first. I don't necessarily think Zuckerberg's going to his better angels before we will. So thank you as always, Mike Johansson.
Yeah, you're welcome. It's fun.
Scott Maloof, a local attorney. Always good. Thank you, Scott. Thanks for the expertise.
My pleasure, Evan.
And I want to mention before we close the hour here, listeners, tonight we've got an important event that we want you to join us for. I'm going to be hosting a community forum with scientists from the University of Rochester Medical Center and Rochester Regional Health, and they are at the forefront of vaccine development, treatment of COVID-19. We're going to talk to them about everything from vaccines to remdesivir to what we understand about the disease in this community, how it spreads, who has been more vulnerable than others. We want to know what's important to you, and you've been sending questions, which we appreciate, to forum@wxxi.org. We're going to be asking the experts your questions during the broadcast. The WXXI Live Forum, Fighting COVID-19 on WXXI TV tonight, 8 o'clock, AM 1370. You can listen. You can stream it on the WXXI News Facebook page and on the WXXI website. Next hour, we want to hear from small business owners. There's a new round of loans ready from the federal government. Did you get one last time? Are you concerned about the application process? Do you have questions? We're going to get them answered next hour.